All right, g'day, Navicastrians, and welcome to this live season review edition of the Jetstream podcast, coming to you from West New Lambton in the immediate aftermath of the 2016 Hyundai A-League Grand Final. First off, congratulations to Adelaide United, and especially Tarek Elrich and Craig Goodwin, our ex-Jets players,
for finally
getting over that hump and getting their Grand Final win and consigning the Wanderers to three Grand Final appearances with zero wins.
The new bridesmaids.
They are now the number of the Mariners.
We are the Wanderers, all right.
So congratulations to those guys. But with the season done and dusted now, we run the rule over the Jets season, and we talk players, coaches, ownership news, and all the other stuff to cap everything off. We've got our two usual suspects here joining me to talk crap. So we welcome Dave.
Hello, mate.
And we welcome Bodes.
Fans.
And if you hear voices floating in from the ether, that will be Toby and Pricey, who are both extremely drunk after watching the Grand Final. All right.
Hello,
so
Jets fans.
We'll get to our opening question. Dave, what do you plan to get up to in the off-season? I suppose is the big burning question.
Mate, probably what I got up to in the last couple of off-seasons, that's continuing to renovate my house. I think that the front veranda and the side veranda are in need of replacement with some balustrades and some tiles. So that's what I'd say I'm going to get up to, as well as painting my garage doors, paint my fence.
So all exciting stuff.
But paint my then. Chicken coop.
Mate, besides banging goals for fun on Saturday for South Cardiff in local all age, I think like normal, just getting pissed.
So nothing's changed.
Nothing's
really
changed, mate. Off season, in season.
Well, my off season's usually spent building up credit for the regular season to turn around again, so my missus doesn't go too apeshit for me doing massive football stuff during the season. All right, so we'll jump into the review. We could pretty much split the season into three sections. You could pick October, November, when we sort of started off really well and we were a bit of an unknown quantity.
We were top of the league, so
we were top of the league for a day or something, if I remember correctly.
Still we're top, which is more than the Mariners got.
Then January, we had that huge barren spell of, was it 9 games without scoring?
Yeah.
And then January to March, where we actually started to pick up our results again, but it wasn't enough, unfortunately, to push us towards that elusive finals appearance. So Dave, what sort of stats did you have for how the season unfolded, especially discussing how we sort of started off, how we sort of went through that middle barren period, and how we recovered towards the end?
Mate, I've taken the time to actually write some stuff down
a lot down.
Yeah, there's a whole A4 page of it.
I like to be
pretty depthy.
I like to be prepared. Anyway, some records that we achieved this year. Look, first win in Gosford in 2,969 days. The first time we've done the clean sweep over Wellington. That's a really good point to take away. First time coming from two down to achieve a win. We did that against Wellington Phoenix. Most penalties awarded in one season, which is 6.
Iceman Triffo.
Third away win, I guess, for us against Wellington. 3 assists in one match, which is a record for the Jets. That's by Ryan Kiddo in the last game of the season.
Kiddo is a beast. We should not have let him go.
We'll get to that. 8 points gained from behind. So that's actually a season record as well for the Jets. 94 offsides, which is the most in the club's history in one season. So, while they're probably the positives or borderline neutrals, there are a couple of negative points as well, which is 7 red cards is the most in one Jets season. 4 by Nigel Bougard.
I was going to say, most of them to Bougard.
4 of the Nigel Bougard actually equals 4 that Griffo's received. And Griffo's the leading red card
recipient
in Jets history. And he achieved that over what? Three and a bit seasons with the Jets or so? Canter now has the most yellow cards in Jets history. And we also achieved our second worst defeat in history as well against Perth.
Yeah, 6-1.
Which is the 6-1. Yeah.
6-1, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, 6-1.
Wasn't a good game, that one.
Boats, how did you see the season unfold?
Mate, I think you've done it right. Put it into three patches. The first month of the season was amazing. I was actually at the first month of the games too. I didn't miss the first month
really?
Of action. Yeah, so I got to see the on top of the league.
Kudos.
So, yeah, no, it was a good month. The second patch... Yeah, no, the second patch was bad. And then, like, the third part, I think, and to be honest, I think this is where we're going to come into. Miller really came into his own in the third patch, because I think the second patch, I think if we look back to Stubbins' career, when things went wrong, he didn't turn it around. Miller did. And I think that's why Miller gets the kudos he deserves. And look, The third patch was where we got Central Coast and those amazing days. And look, no better days than they were.
And Dave, how did you see the season start, especially considering that all the players that we started the season with, were none of them were Miller signings?
We were an unknown quantity in that first part of the season, so teams didn't know, A, how we were going to set up, because we realistically got only one match that the teams could see us, and that was the FFA Cup match against Perth Glory, which unfortunately we lost, and that's something I'd like to see us turn around next season. Mm. But after we spoke about it on the pod. We said after those first three wins in four matches, teams are going to work us out, and they eventually did. And we didn't have a way of overcoming that at all. So, great start, but that was, in my opinion, simply because we were an unknown quantity to the rest of the league.
How crucial was that slump, and going on from what Dave said, Bodes, with losing Labby, I think, was a major contributing factor. Not having a plan B, and basically having to rely on Trifunovic, Leo being in and out of the team due to injury. Yeah. How much were those two factors a major factor?
They were huge. The Labby one, I think, is the biggest, because it really only left us with one way to play, which was to not so much lump it long to Trifunovic, but to more or less play to his strengths, where I think Labby was one of those players where he could play different ways, sort of thing. And look, I think we saw in the last 10 weeks how important Leo was when he came into the fold. So I think, and the two signings we made. Sorry, Dave.
No, mate,
that's all I really...
We're just having an attacking midfield.
Yeah.
Labby actually offered something different to Trifunovic, which is something that none of the bench players had. Labby offered A, experience. He offered a goal-scoring option. But he also offered energy off the bench, which is something that wasn't Trifunovic's strength. Labby was
ability
our runners.
To chase the ball you couldn't get.
And we saw that in that Perth match. I remember sitting there watching, and Labby chased down everything. And Labby has an innate ability to get into scoring positions. And it's just a real ability of his. To lose him in, I think it was the second match or the third match of the season.
Yeah, the Sydney FC game. And they come out saying he would only be out for a couple of weeks, and then I think on Monday they basically just announced that he's gone for the year.
Yeah, mate, I jinxed him because I was really, really happy to see him. And I said to my mate Mick, Labby's such a great player because the bloke is really reliable and he simply does not get injured. And he simply got injured that match. Yeah. So you can probably blame that whole... loss of the season.
You're the new Ferns.
It's your mate. Just happens. You can't control it. It's a bad injury, but it's not your fault, man.
Was there any changes to the system that Scott Miller could have made that would have made Trifunovic more effective?
Look, I think we touched on it numerous times throughout the weeks. I think we should have gone earlier to the 4-4-2. And you saw the second we did, the day we did change the 4-4-2 against the Phoenix, we got that big result. Look, Miller's a debut coach. You've got to take the good with the bad sort of thing. And he was set on his way to play. And look, he did change it. And credit to him, we began to get results. So, yeah, look, we could have done it sooner, but we'll build.
It's hard to play a 4-4-2 with only one dedicated striker. I think it would have been much easier to play with Nordstrand in contention. And I think... Obviously he was a bit green, wasn't fully match fit. Starting him on the wing was the right decision. Then we got Nordstrand as the sole striker. He added so much movement going forward. He opened all kinds of gaps up for our attack. And you can see what happened against the Coast. Like, we wrecked them. It was fucking excellent.
It worked. All right, so style of play, Dave. How much did it change during those three sessions of the season? Did you see Scott Miller trying different things in the early part of the season, and then the reason why we had that slump was because it was too static, he wasn't changing things?
I guess Scott Miller didn't adapt to when Leonardo was Leo was cut down by Jake McGing in the Mariners home game that the Jets had. And we took a long time to learn how to play, I guess, without him. That was the point of view, I guess, that Scott Miller took a long time to adapt to Leonardo's absence. And while he wasn't on the field all the time, it was one of those things that we just had to deal with. Right?
Yeah, mate, you've once again nailed it. I've agreed with most of the stuff you've said.
See, because I'm prepared, mate.
Yeah, you're prepared, mate. Look.
All right, so... Yeah, all right, so Leo, when he was in, obviously, Bodes was effective, but... can we really rely on an import player who's missing that often?
No.
And is that inconsistent?
You can't. And
especially when recovering from injury.
And I think the right call has been made in letting him go. I think he's going to be 34 next year, Dave.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, look, you can't rely on... Your number 10 needs to play 27 games a year. And especially a foreigner, you can't rely on your foreigners to be injured. So
it is hard on them.
Leo was probably, though, if you reflect upon his time with the Jets, he was the most creative player we've had in a very long time at the club. The likes of your Vignaroli's, potentially your Marcos Flores coming into line, but Leo is the style of player that we've been looking out for in an attacking sense. From a defensive side of things, though, he was non-existent.
Yeah.
And also too, he's I'd say it's almost an agenda. He's an agenda with his teammates. You'd see at the halftime him blowing up when he gets subbed off. He wasn't a fan of getting subbed. Yeah, no, he did, and I think he was allowed to play the last couple of games without being subbed. Maybe based on that, so.
Yeah, just to shut him up. Dave, something that you brought up before, and we should probably talk about now. What players do you think were played too much and should have been given a rest? And what players do you think we didn't use enough and should have been played more?
Here's Dave's favourite player for answer one.
Look, I've said it a number of times. I called for Cam Watson as a good signing at the beginning of the year. We saw him play against Perth in the FFA Cup, and I thought he was fantastic.
That was just that one good match.
Yeah. Cam Watson for me was probably the player we played a little bit too much, and that's probably been reflected in the fact that he's been released by the club now. The player that we didn't see that I thought may have actually got to go is probably Andrew Parwak, the captain of the youth team. Played a number of times, and there were times where we were crying out for a different player in central midfield, more along prior to assigning Jugarkovic. And you know, Palak, by what I've seen, is that sort of player. He's the one that I'm a bit disappointed that was on the bench a couple of times, but never actually got the opportunity to go on and actually get a first team start for the club. So he's the one for me. Boats?
I think Dave's missed the biggest one, Mitch Cooper.
Yeah.
I think one bad half and he was hardly seen for the rest of the year. And I think the opportunity he did get when Ryan Kiddo was injured, I thought he did nothing wrong. So
what did Cooper play this year? Cooper played 12 matches, 4 starts, 8 subs appearances.
Well, there you go. At the back end of the season before, he was our most important player.
Yeah.
So, look, yeah, he didn't...
He is a solid addition to the squad.
It's interesting for me, I guess, Bodes, that Mitch Cooper wasn't present in that massive run in the middle of the season where the Jets didn't win a game. So, you wonder whether there's a correlation with where he was starting to make some appearances towards the beginning and the end of the season where the Jets were successful to an extent. But in that barren run, he wasn't a feature at all in the team.
Yeah, so. I think during the barren run, I think Scott was more or less, let's not so worry about getting a creative player in the team. Let's settle the defence down. But the thing is, that was the period where we should have been looking for the attacking players coming to get us out of this sort of run sort of thing. And look, as we all say, Scott sees him at training every day. We don't. So
yeah, exactly.
Who's to say he didn't change? Maybe around January, February, he turned it around and he started putting extras in. You're not to know.
Alright, so, Boats, what players do you think overachieved and underachieved?
Well, overachieved, I think the most easiest one is Jason Hoffman. He was fantastic. When he re-signed, I thought, oh, Jesus, this screams like Gary Van Egmond re-signed, like just a fit bloke who's going to run for you. But he was fantastic. I couldn't have, couldn't have been better. Who else overachieved? Ryan Kiddo, I'd say he overachieved. He came with no fanfare, and I think he overachieved.
We missed not re-signing Kiddo. He had a fantastic last third of the season.
Yeah,
he did so many good things, and I think we should have kept him on.
For who underachieved though? Mr. Watson, obviously. But the biggest, once again, the biggest again, Enver Ilivadic.
Yeah.
When he re-signed, that was the most important re-signing for
it
me.
It was.
For a foreigner.
Him and Leake G.
Yeah. We could almost say Leake G underachieved as well. He didn't.
Was
really,
he around long enough to underachieve?
He was here till December, wasn't he? So that's 3 months of the season. Yeah. Who else underachieved?
Let Dave have an answer. Mate, I'll say a player that probably overachieved for me, in so much as the fact that he had a fair bit to prove to Jets fans of his level of commitment, Mark Birigidi. After walking out on the club in his biggest time of need and leaving them with essentially Ben Kennedy as their only recognised keeper and a retired, now come out of retirement, Michael Bridges style, Jess Van Stratton. Look, I love Jess after his blow up in Melbourne. That was fantastic. Mm. But let's put that aside. Mark Birigidi had a lot to win over the Jets fans, and it says a lot at the level of his performance that he's been able to win the Player of the Year this year and also be voted, I would almost say unanimously by the fans, as our Player of the Season. It speaks of the high level of his performance and also his level of commitment and passion that he's shown to the club. I won't forget, and it's a lasting memory in my mind, the celebration that he, Jason Hoffman, and Dan Mullen had at the end of the round 21 match in Central Coast, where they all celebrated, ran and hugged, and then ran straight across to the squadron, or the travelling fans. Pardon me, the travelling fans. That was
travelling squadron.
The travelling squadron. That was fantastic, and it's actually interesting to a point now that a lot of fans won't begrudge him actually taking the opportunity to walk away from the club and now go overseas and pursue potentially a European contract.
Would you begrudge anyone though, Dave? If someone was going to pursue that, you wouldn't begrudge any.
But it depends on It depends on the terms in which they've left. If Birigidi had done that last year, I would have said, "Well, geez, you've really just stuffed over the club. You've used this as a point of view, as a point of accessing it." But like, if you compare the likes of, say, Nick Carr before him, who had left after he was one of the players of the season, and Birigidi was robbed, if you're in my opinion, for the goalkeeper of the year.
Yeah.
I don't think we can knock him back for leaving.
What about if he leaves to go to Perth Boats?
If he leaves to Perth, Grant, I think that's a different story. I don't think he would only do it for family reasons, but I don't think he would be doing a sidestep on his career. I don't think he would be doing a forward step. And look, to be honest, would he want to do that? He's got a good goal. He's openly said he has a good goalkeeping coach who he enjoys the interaction with, and he says he enjoys playing for Newcastle. Yeah. It would only be for family reasons, but it would be not. Yeah, like I said, a side would step.
I agree, mate. If he's to leave for another A-League club, it's completely different than if you're leaving for a European team or actually, even if he's leaving for a Chinese team, I probably would feel pretty downtrodden over it because if he's looking to pursue himself in essentially the most competitive continent in the world for football, then that would be a thing. But yeah, Perth is said to be looking after Brad Jones, so good luck to him.
Yeah, fair enough.
The Asian sector is an upcoming, though. It's you can't
money. Money
talk. It's more money.
But money's becoming part of football. Like, you can't just beside the fact that it's all about family. Money. Because, money makes a league in some areas of the world.
I think the Birigidi family has enough money outside of the A-League to get Mark to come back.
Okay.
Wherever Mark decides to play is up to him.
All right, so, Dave, do you have a different Player of the Season, or do you agree with the fans' choice of Mark Birigidi?
Birigidi, for me, close second, Jason Hoffman, and you know what? It would be even a challenge if he was here for longer, Steven Jugarkovic.
I think he'd be looking at
big one. Definitely.
Boats?
I can't really go past Dave's selection. Another one I give, and to be honest, I thought about it more because we talked about it before the pod, Mateo Poliak. I don't think he ever put a foot wrong. I don't think he had. He was a 7 out of 10 every game.
Yeah. He's a Joe Allen.
Yeah,
he's a Joe Allen.
Liverpool reference.
Far out.
All right, so we'll switch. We'll switch to the coach.
I have to go now.
He's a James Milner type player.
So I'd agree with the Mark Birigidi call as well as Player of the Season. Bodes, Scott Miller, thoughts and assessment. Obviously, a rookie coach come in, has a very dependable second in command with John Paul. So, what was your assessment on his season?
I think I give him a Joe Allen, a 7 out of 10. I think Scott grew as a coach as the year went on, and to be honest, he's going to be so much better for it next year. Like, in terms of form, in a football sense, the ability to change the formation when he was stuck on something, fantastic. His player recruitment, I think Leonardo and Trifunovic, yes, okay, maybe you can question them, but hey, at the end of the day, Trifunovic scored 9 goals and Leo had a big part to play. And Agarkovic, what a pickup. And he even came out and said, I've been keeping tabs on this bloke for 12 months. So recruitment, I would give him probably almost a 9 out of 10. Sorry, and I just finish off with...
high five.
Look at the
where's the Sydney flair?
Trying to do a podcast
SOS for the Wanderers season. I'd say this and this is the biggest thing for me. The last game of the season when Miller come over and the whole way in got up and clapped him. Imagine if Phil Stubbins did that. There would have been pitchforks, there would have been rocks.
We would have launched the spoons at him premature.
Gary Van Egmond never got... Gary Van Egmond didn't even get that. No. And Scott Miller did. I think that just shows how much of a job he did. And I look forward to seeing that for next season, what he does. And look, I'm going to trust him to get his recruitment right.
Mate, I'll actually take away... Look, there's a couple of things that Scott Miller failed to achieve that others have failed to achieve before me, and that's to try and arrest the slide that we've had against teams in particular, Perth and Sydney. We only managed to take 16 points from our 30 against the two teams that were below us.
Yep.
So we took 14 points from the 7 teams above us. We've really got to address that slide and that slump. In saying that, we've managed to keep the Central Coast Mariners now 5 matches without taking a lead against the Jets, which is now 450 minutes. So, overall, I'd probably give him a B. For me, it took him too long to... Yeah, I'm going away from your
7 out of 10.
I'm not giving him 7 out of 10.
a B.
He probably took too long to address the middle of the season. And yeah. he was very stubborn... In his approach.
Stubborn.
No, not stubborns. He was stubborn in his approach to the middle of the season and addressing the scoreless slump that we did have. Hopefully he's learnt from that, and I think he admitted that it took his time to do that, and we managed to, I guess, regain some level of dignity towards the end of the season.
Another thing too, I didn't pick up, which I think he deserves a complete ten out of 10 for, is his handling of the David Carney situation.
Yeah,
that is a big thing for a new coach to go through, to have your essentially to have your best player and most attacking outlet to want to walk, well, essentially to walk out in the club. But he handled it fantastically. Compared to how I think the club handled it, I think he did a fantastic job.
Look, that was something I reflected on at the time when it was happening. They certainly handled David Carney departure this year. They, as a club, I should say, handled the David Carney departure with a lot more dignity.
Yeah, that's probably the word, dignity.
Came out smelling a lot more like roses than they did in the previous season with the way they handled the departure of Griff, God rest his soul, and...
he's not dead.
He's dead in terms of the Jets at the moment, unfortunately, and the coaches as well.
All right, so Bodes put... Obviously, it's going to depend largely on new ownership coming in.
Yep.
Would you keep him, or would you be looking to bring in someone more experienced next season?
Scott?
Yeah.
No. He's got to stay. We'd be starting again.
Mm.
We would be even if we got a good coach in,
yep,
he'd do his own thing for 12 months. We'd finish 7th or 8th again, and you'd be thinking, God, I can't wait for next season.
And has that not been the last 5 seasons?
It's been the last six seasons.
You know what I'm saying? Since
I kind of almost think about Branko when he was let go. That season was a write-off before it happened. Yeah. So, he has to stay. JP has to stay. Keep the staff as... Or actually, the coaching staff as it is.
Give him a season at least under new ownership.
Yeah, look, if we don't make finals football next year, he will go.
Unless a new coach comes in and absolutely blows the league out of the water, we will all be sitting there going... Scotty could have been doing better than this. Could have been doing better than that. And comparing them both. And that's not something that we need, because we've started to re-engage not just with the fans, but also with the business community as well. I think it's important that the Jets continue that momentum under a new ownership. And to continue that stability, they need to be retaining Scott Miller and JP for that time. Right.
It really needs that consistency, though.
Yeah, exactly.
It does.
That's it.
It does. We've had Zane, we've had Van Egmond, we've had Stubbins, and now we've had Miller in the space of 3 seasons. Yeah. 4 coaches in 3 seasons. I mean,
and the thing is it comes in at half season, they get to the end of the season, they do their thing, It doesn't work by half season. They get released.
Yep.
It's the same thing over and over again. You need to give Miller a chance, do his thing, bring in the players he wants.
Yep.
You know, he's already released the players that he doesn't want, which is fair enough. That's his go. As Bodhi said, you know, that's he sees them on the training pitch every day. That's yep. his decision. Yeah. He's going to bring in the people that he wants.
Well, good segue into the next point, Pricey. So we'll talk about recruitment. So obviously Trifo was released on the 1st of April and then pretty soon after the end of the season, basically the following week, we saw Enver, Leo, Kiddo, Watson, Lundy and Barresi being cut. Bodes, did you have any problems with any of those?
No, I'm happy with it. Look, I would have liked to have kept Ryan Kiddo, but the rumours seem to be circulating that he's going to take Craig Goodwin's spot at Adelaide. And he's an Adelaide boy. You can't judge the begrudge him of returning home. And I think an important thing is, not so much with the Devante Klute signing, which we'll come on to, he hasn't gone out and started signing players straight away. Because, look, once the European season finishes, a lot of players are going to become available. Look at Central Coast. They've gone ahead and signed Tavares and Fatty, and their foreigners are done.
Yeah, they've got no space.
What happens if another... not so much a Luis Garcia, but a good European player comes available? They're buckled unless they release Montgomery or Ferreira, which you think they wouldn't do.
Well, the rumours are actually that they want to get, listening to the Fox Sports podcast, that they want to get rid of a number of their, they've asked a number of their older players whether they're willing to consider retiring.
So Montgomery?
That seems to be the inference, yeah.
Because I was about to say he's the only player of age, probably.
Yeah.
So how did you see the releases?
Initially, the only one that came of a surprise to me was Ryan Kiddo. Mm. I thought that even prior to the end of the match, prior to his performance in that last match of the season, he'd done enough to at least warrant a substitute or a squatty type position. However, a number of people pointed out, and I think upon reflection quite correctly, that we have a number of those positions. Yeah. I mentioned on a previous podcast that we're really heavy up front with players of a similar type of nature between Kitto, Lundy, Pavicevic,
Pavicevic.
Mitch isn't here, so I can pronounce him however I want. What's the other one? Brennan?
Yeah.
Those sort of Nordstrom, even to an extent. We're very heavy on those sort of... Enver. We're heavy on those sorts of players that are all wide players, young or really experienced or really young, that was affecting the overall balance of the squad. And I think we needed a change. Two that actually failed to get a mention in there as well, Crowley and Tuxford.
Yeah.
So, again...
Well, they were youth contracts. Oh,
they were, so but that's... I'm not surprised to see them go.
Yeah, I think it's up for a rumour, I guess, because they're all going to... Was it Northcote? Is it?
Yeah.
I about to say, and the young fella from Hamilton Olympics just going, maybe the Jets have put a little bit of a tab on Northcote and maybe got an agreement with them that they could possibly come back, because they're both eligible to play another youth series in Tuxford and Crowley, yeah. So... Who's to say they won't come back?
There's nothing to say that.
Yeah.
All right, so the signings that we've obviously announced two in the last 2 weeks, so how important, Dave, was the re-signing of Nordstrom for another season?
I was a bit interested in Nordstrom because I wasn't convinced that he's a starter. I thought we needed a more mobile type striker, but do you know what? I have a fear that he could be this year's Enver Ljubičić, in the fact that we see him looking really good in a couple of games, a handful of games, without a preseason under his belt. But the Nordstrom that we're seeing now is the Nordstrom that we're actually going to get.
Yeah.
Hopefully, I really hope I'm proven wrong and that a preseason, his family coming out here, solidifies his position in the team. He's able to train really well and go another level from the level that we've seen. And when we have seen him, he's been very clinical. He's been good in probably two of the matches and the two matches he scored in, because he went off the boil for a bit. But Nordstrom was, do you know what, probably an important signing. We still have three foreign spots that we can use.
Yep.
Nordstrom has ability and flexibility to play out wide and central. Not a bad re-signing.
What about you, Bones?
The only thing I'll say that compares Enver to Nordstrom, which has me a little bit more confident, is that Nordstrom is clinical in front of goal.
Yeah.
I would never say that wasn't one of Enver's capabilities, I would say, and I think he more than proved it at the last game at the Central Coast. I think the poor bloke
still
could have
got a goal.
The poor bloke could have had five of the bastards.
Yeah, it could have pretty much fallen over the bloody ball and it still would have gone in the net.
Anyway.
All right. So, Dave, you've obviously... pretty happy with the signing of Devante Klute. Obviously, it was rumoured earlier on in the season he wanted to bring him in January, but that didn't happen, obviously, because Brisbane didn't want to release him before the end of the season. But yep. now he's here. He's signed for two seasons. How have you seen how he's been a player at Brisbane? And he's obviously moved around a couple of clubs in his early years. And what do you think he's going to do?
Mate, Devante Clute, for me, is an unknown quantity. He comes to the club with the same sort of potential that Mitch Cooper had a number of seasons ago. Having not really seen him other than maybe once, I think it was in an ACL game where he scored a goal, I'm not in too much of a position to judge at the moment on his level of performance. What I'm really basing my reaction upon and thinking that it's a reasonable signing for the squad is that Brisbane fans are pissed off, and also opposition fans are pissed off that they didn't... Brisbane fans are pissed off they didn't get him. And
keep him,
and other fans are disappointed they didn't get him. So, but again, we would like that with Cooper. So, let's wait and see.
Boats?
Yeah, I'm a bit like Dave. It's a wait and see prospect. I think I'm excited to see. I kind of get the Brennan feeling.
Yeah. That
this bloke's coming with a good background, good rep, sort of thing, but. Is he going to be a starting player? Because when you sign a player for two years, you're signing on the basis that they're going to play in the first team. If you're going to sign a squad player, you sign him to year contract. So 2 year deal, you're hoping he's going to be playing.
I would probably see it maybe slightly differently. I would see if you're signing somebody that young for two seasons, you're looking at building them up in the first season to basically be a breakout in the second season.
The way I see it, it's a 10-team competition. There's no such thing as a breakout season. Look at Western Sydney Wanderers. Tony Popovich said the other day when they let go of 13 players last year, he said, no, we're not having a rebuild. We want to win titles straight away next year, and look what happened.
They did.
They come close, but they didn't.
I mean, they got there.
They
qualified for the final.
I'm being facetious because I picked Tony Popovich to be the coach that got the sack.
But look, that also shows Western Sydney's pulling power and the money that they had, the ability to go out and buy the players. We didn't buy Dario Vidicic and Mitch Nichols. They did. We bought Cameron Watson
and that's why I think that the signing of Clute for two seasons is more trying to build a player up to become a decent. We're not shopping in that aisle of the supermarket.
No, we're not.
We're shopping in Aldi.
But he's a Miller signing.
Yeah.
A lot of the players that weren't Miller signings. So that's also another important point for me, that if we retain Miller, we at least are now starting to see some of his signings come through that another coach may not necessarily have faith in.
Which makes the importance of him staying on for another season even higher.
Yeah.
I think the Nordstrom signing is a major, especially if his family comes over, though. You saw it with Zura when his family wasn't allowed to come over.
Helps them focus.
You know,
settles them.
It didn't help Enver. His family. It did help Trifunovic. His family was
here. If you're worrying about your family and trying to play football at the same time, it's a whole different ballgame.
Definitely.
You know, if your family's here, you're able to look after your kids, love your wife, like, it brings a whole different nature into your ballgame on the pitch.
I
think the Nordstrom signing is massive. I think you're going to see a lot more out of him, especially if your family does get over here.
I think that they will as well.
As Bodie said, you know, his clinical strike, there's no doubt about it. He can score goals if he's in that position.
All right, last thing on the players. Dave, is there anybody who you would release regardless of contract status? Is there anyone that you think if we could get rid of him, it would probably be a good idea to get rid of him now?
Canner.
I'd probably look at... I wouldn't let Canner go.
No?
I would still re-sign
Canner.
He's
still up in the air.
He is, but rumours are that he's actually signing this week.
Fair enough.
So,
what has he done,
mate, for me, the only one that I would consider would be one of Andy Brennan and Radovan Pavicevic. Again, two central players that have the ability. I think Andy Brennan's more of a central player to me, but he's probably the only one. Other than that, I think we've got it pretty bang on.
I would agree with Pavicevic.
Yeah, Radovan would be the one that I think he's had more than enough chances now. And I have, admittingly, he's not playing in the youth team. He played in the youth team last season, and there were State League centre-backs, 32, 33-year-old, who were bouncing him off the ball, and I'm thinking, your skill really should be...
He's NPL level.
Yeah.
He's NPL level.
Yeah,
should be on the next
level. Yeah. Look, he seems like a decent guy, but, yeah, I would be moving him on.
Well, yeah, 17 appearances so far, one start, 16 appearances as a sub, 342 minutes he's played. Granted, he scored a goal. He's actually the last player to score a goal off the subs bench for us. That was last season.
Let's be honest, it's dismal.
Yeah.
You need more.
And he's not a wide player. He's a striker.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
I think Andy Brennan would play that role better because he's got more of the mould of a Harry Kane, strong, physical player that has a bit of pace about him.
I'm with Brennan, I'm willing to give him a pre-season because I about to say it was well reported that the bloke did not transition to professional football.
It's taken him so long to adjust.
Yeah, and you think now we've put the money...
Yep, the time.
The time. You don't want to waste your product.
But then again, he is a stubborn signing, so whether Scotty Miller sees any benefit in keeping him, we'll find out.
Apparently.
All right, so, Bodes, best moment of the season and best game of the season? It's a free kick.
Is that a real question? It's either one, the first Central Coast game, or two, the second Central Coast game. Like, can you beat the second Central Coast game?
Moment of the season, I'll have two moments of the season. Number one would be the 3-2 against City. That was, I was at SJ's.
I was going to say that for my best game of the season.
60 or 70 fans at SJ's, and just the sound, that was just, and it was a bit emotional. I was just thinking after last year to be top of the league for 24 hours, or... David already picked up on it when we won in Central Coast for the 1-0 for the first time, and how much it meant to the players. That was a bit special. The ending with Hoff and everything, that was pretty special. Game of the season, I'm actually going to go a bit out of the box. I'm going to say Wellington 3-2 at home. I really enjoyed that game. The goals, I'm going to go. That's my game of the season.
Dave,
mate, there's a couple of points that spring to mind initially. The ref round was excellent.
That was awesome.
The ref round against Brisbane Roar was excellent.
Happen again.
Mark Birigidi copping a kick in the teeth against Sydney round two. That was one of our lower lights of the season. Simply from a personal side of things, that you feel really bad for the bloke that Shane Smith had done it to him again. I mean, one of the goals of the season even was David Carney's strike from outside the box against Melbourne Victory. That was fantastic. But for me. You know, my moment of the season was the very first Central Coast match away where we won. That was my very first occasion away from the Central, away to Central Coast. That was a great experience. Match of the season, I have to agree with Bodes that from a comeback side of things, that with the Melbourne 3-2 was excellent. But I think we saved our best for last, and that was the Central Coast
4-2.
Yeah, that was out of this world. To score the fastest goal in Jets League history, and to have that stat recounted to me by a drunk bloke on the steps of Gosford Station, that was terrific.
Yeah,
I hope he's listening, by the way. And Bon, you can tell your mate that.
I would agree there. I would. And from an analytical standpoint, from an emotional standpoint, obviously you got to pick one of the two F3 Derby wins down in Gosford. But I would also echo what you said about the City game, especially considering we don't do that usually. We don't go down goals, and we came back after being two goals down to win that game 3-2. That's not really the sort of mentality. Bodes drink.
We did it twice.
Yeah. It's not really the mentality that we show, and that was sort of the one thing that I take from Scott Miller's reign thus far, that he's instilled that mentality. That, I mean, that was why Perth was such a hard thing to take, because before that game we did come back after going down. You never thought we were out of it until 4, 5, and 6 went in. But yeah, so I would highlight those two. But the best moment of the season is definitely the trouncing of Central Coast down in Gosford. You can't really get any better than that.
That was fabulous. Like, actually, I'm gonna add one more. How good was it?
You greedy bastard.
How good was it celebrating the Nigel Bugard no goal, then Trifunovic penalty, when we actually broke our 556 minute duck?
Yeah.
How
we kept the New Zealand Knights in the record books.
Yeah,
yeah, we did. And It feels a bit funny to be celebrating such a poor record, but it was fantastic just to celebrate a goal at home and remember how to celebrate a goal. I mean, I didn't remember how to do it.
It's been so long.
And you know what? Actually, kudos to Cantor. 2 goals this year.
Yeah.
Tripled his tally. He's on. Good on you, Cantor.
All right. So just before we wrap everything up, we'll quickly jump into some ownership news. Obviously, there isn't a great deal being mentioned at the moment. I think basically that's being kept on ice until after the grand final. Obviously, that's done and dusted with now. By the time this, who knows, even by the time this podcast comes out, it's probably going to take me till Tuesday or Wednesday to edit out Toby's drunken ramblings. But we may have some news this week. We don't know, but there has been some rumours popping up around the place that Laurie McKenna is being earmarked for a position within the Jets hierarchy. No. I'm hoping that's not as a coach, although that is rumoured to be. Martin Lee was apparently CEO. Approached by Laurie McKenna, and Dave, you've just said CEO. I don't really think that's a position he would be a good idea. I would look at
Robbie Middleby.
Director of football or technical director or director of high performance or something like
just
that.
Nothing,
like
Bode
football
says.
Department.
Mm.
Director of the football department, but I couldn't see him running the club, and I couldn't see him being the coach.
Well, we've had Nick DeLuca come back on a contract basis as
football,
the
director
manager.
Of football operations. Yeah,
yeah. Well, something like that. That could be the. I mean, obviously we have Dave Eland acting as the CEO at the moment
until next month.
They're the two positions that are really up for grabs within the club, and the Herald seem to be reporting on it in bits and pieces. Look, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. And it's going to rub a lot of Jets fans raw to have a Mariner, a former Mariners coach and a person who we really despised involved with our club.
And who played some awful football.
Oh, they just played awful football all the time.
Awful football.
Yeah, so let's just see what happens. I guess we'll have to... But do you know what? It might be like Sasho. If he takes the club to a new level and is successful,
or the spanner,
all may be forgiven and forgotten. Maybe we'll have to wait and see.
Bodes? I don't think so, though.
Never forgotten. Look, I'm going to say this.
He's all over it.
I have a lot more respect for the guy after I listened to the Behind the Game podcast. And if Rogan's listening, mate, you do a fantastic job.
Yeah.
But the bloke has come out and thoroughly said that club is at the bottom of his heart. And I'll tell you now, that club is at the opposite end of my heart. I despise that club. Why should we look to involve someone who was so heavily... I know the Mariners shit on him.
Mm.
They did shit on him.
Yeah.
And look, it's sad to see it happen. But no, the bloke cannot be involved in any way. Look, I know you'll say Sasho, but guess what? Sasho didn't make his name at the Mariners.
No,
he made his name at Sydney and at previous NSL clubs.
Yeah.
So for me, Laurie.
But he still celebrated against us like it meant something to him.
Well, that's a. Haven't you said that you don't give a rat's ass for celebrating against your old club? Or is that Ferns who says that?
Doesn't sound like I'd say, mate.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a facade, though.
Yeah, no.
What's the last point, Ferns?
That actually was the last point. So basically, we want to thank everybody for listening. That'll pretty much wrap up the season review. Nice, short and sharp and to the point.
Hang on. You got a question on Facebook about a suggestion that the podcast should have.
Yeah, some submitted by one D. Keating, possibly.
DK.
Yeah.
He may be a contributor, but he also has a point of view.
Yeah, what was your point of view?
Can we just have a moment to say... Ben Kennedy, can we just pass all of our kind thoughts and acknowledgements towards your family? It's a very hard loss, and we're happy to support Ben Kennedy and the Breast Cancer Foundations with what's happened. But Ben, all our love to you and your family, mate. You've worked your ass out for the club, and I hope you guys are okay. And if you're not okay, then just lean out and we'll help you out.
Yeah. Well, no, I'll leave that bit in, Tobes. Thanks for that, mate. No worries. So, yes, we do pass our sympathies on to Ben Kennedy for the loss of his mum due to cancer. Karen, rest in peace. And Ben, everybody sends their thoughts and sympathies to you and your family. All right, so we'll wrap everything up. Thanks very much for listening, guys. Really appreciate you all downloading and subscribing and listening to the podcast throughout the season. We will be doing some random specials throughout the off-season. We're going to try and get a couple of professional journalists journalists on if I can, and we're also going to do some interviews, hopefully with some club officials and some players, depending on what available times Dave has to be able to do that. So really thank everyone for downloading this. Hopefully everyone enjoys it. Please spread the word on Facebook, Twitter, all that sort of thing. You can email us podcast@newcastlefootball.net, at Jetstream Newey on Twitter, facebook.com/JetstreamNewey. What's your Twitter handle for this week, Bodes?
Bring back Mitch. No, I actually want to go on to it. Mitch, great effort this year on the pod, mate.
Yeah, he's not made one single episode, has he?
No, mate. The bloke was there every week.
Every week, in spirit.
Look, Matt Simon moved to Sydney, and it was a bit hard to commute up to Newcastle to do podcasts.
That's exactly right. All right, well, thanks very much, Dave.
Mate, thank you. And I'd also just like to say thank you to those outside the club who gave us the interviews for the Jetstream Extra.
Brett and Joel
from the
Power Chair.
Dimitri as well from the Power Chair team. Cassidy Davis from the W League team. Hopefully that's something that we can continue to explore these opportunities next year. Look, it's been really enjoyable and something different, I guess, for the pod this year. So,
yeah,
mate, you can find me on Jetapool on Twitter.
Find me on Jetapool.
Find me at Jetapool on Twitter. Thanks for having me on again this year, Ferns, and, mate, well done for the pod.
Thanks very much. All right.
Wait for your statistics, though.
Yeah, they'll be on.
Oh, mate, I try to be.
All right, guys, we'll wrap it up. Thanks very much, and we will speak to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.